if you're trying to start a business, you need to start something that also kind of fits in with your core values and your lifestyle of what are you trying to live like, because making money is not everything. It's part of it. And I think being happy and being fulfilled and satisfied internally, to me, is a lot more rewarding than making the money.
Let's go.
Hello and welcome to the brand new You Show, the e-podcast dedicated to helping you build your brand so you can get recognized for your expertise. I'm your host, Ryan Roten, and today I welcome to the show Aaron Pearson from AaronPearson.com. Aaron is a digital brand strategist, a killer content creator, a filmmaker, a number one best-selling author, a podcaster, and an award-winning designer. He has worked with the likes of John Lee Dumas from Entrepreneur on Fire and Joshua Smith from GSD Mode. Aaron is an ex-rock climber, a husband, a father, and he wants to help you do branding like a boss. Aaron, welcome to the show.
I love it, man. Thank you so much for having me on.
No problem. And I apologize if I butchered the branding like a boss. I don't think I could ever do it as well as you do on your podcast.
It's boss. That's okay.
It grabs me when you say it. I'm like, yes, I want to do branding like a boss.
Yeah. I love it, man. Yeah, thanks for having me on. I mean, it's been great to finally connect and make this interview happen. So I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited too. I read your book last year, and I've been looking forward to this discussion for a while, and I am ready to dive in. But first, I have one question I like to ask all my guests before we get started, which is, if you could vacation in only one place for the rest of your vacation days, where would you go?
Oh, man. Well, you know I travel around the world, right?
This is I
a difficult
do.
Question. It'd have to have great weather all the time. It'd probably be somewhere subtropical. Man, this is tough. This is a really tough question. I'd probably say Hawaii, to be honest. I mean, I know I'd get island fever after a while, but Hawaii is a pretty good, it's the type of climate and place where I could see myself being, there for a long time. That's because you're forcing me for one answer.
Right after you graduated with your degree, you started an agency. Most people, when they're graduating with their degrees, they're thinking, I'm going to go work for a company. But not only did you start an agency, but you turned it into a pretty successful agency. You know, what made you think, right, coming right out of school with your degree, that, hey, you know what, I think starting a business would be a good idea?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I actually had started my business while I was in school, and it was because there was a demand. And what happened was it was actually there's a difference between being a freelancer and owning an agency. And I had kind of this freelance business while I was in school, and it turned into the situation where the demand was greater than I could fulfill. And that's where I had to start bringing in additional talent, salespeople, you know, account managers, project managers, and then a handful of creatives. So it was honestly, it happened out of necessity, not out of desire. And, you know, it was just kind of the natural progression of where I was. There was a demand for identity design and business card design and print in my area. And I noticed that there was a lot of just smaller mom and pop shops that needed new business cards. Well, a new business card also provided me with an opportunity to give them a new look and feel, a new visual identity. So I would say, yeah, absolutely, business cards, we totally do that. But we also do identity design. Let's talk about that, you know, and we would go down kind of that conversation. And then from, you know, from the initial start off point, which was, hey, I need a business card, we'll end up doing an entire identity system, web design, print, and a handful of other assets, you know, digital assets. So it was really just based out of necessity that agency was developed. And then I don't know if you're going to ask me this later, but later on I did end up selling that company. I got out of that business for other reasons. So yeah, which is not even close to the agency that I run today.
So how did you find the first client? I think that's the big hurdle that most people, when they think I'm going to start a business or they start something on the side, whether it's an agency or freelancing, that's one of the first things they wrestle is, where do I get that first client?
Yeah. So for me, because you're dealing with design and a lot of, aesthetic related artifacts like a business card, it actually all started because I had designed my own business card, which said, I'm a freelancer, I'm a designer, contact me, whatever. And, I had given, you know, people just see my card and they saw the quality and they saw the design that I was really trying to embody and the look and feel I was really trying to create. And that's how it all started. It started because they had seen what I was producing and they said, I want that for me. Can you do that? So it didn't happen by cold calling or, you know, reaching out. Like I wasn't pounding on doors or anything like that. Now I have done that in the past, but it happened because I do really good work. So when you do really good work, people are attracted to that. And as long as that conversation can be started and you can, you know, find some common grounds and maybe you share some ideas and values of like what you want to provide for your clients, you know, the affinity is there and it attracts business. And it was another thing that was a very natural progression. Just people saw the work, they really liked it, and they wanted me to do a similar treatment for them.
It's pretty cool. When you demonstrate your expertise in public like that, people do take notice and they will want to know more, learn more, or do business with you at times, right?
Yeah, and I'll tell you something interesting too in regards to that, because this isn't about my first client, but this is about a bigger client like John Lee Dumas, who is, you know, one of the top podcasters. What I did to start that conversation and earn trust with somebody who was way above me in the social spectrum, right?
Yeah.
So far away, just massive, you know, millions of downloads a month. And so what I did was I used my design skills to create an artifact that he could then use for himself. And I did that for free. I didn't ask for any money. I did it because, first of all, I was a fan of his show. And second of all, I was like, man, this is really cool. I think he would use this. I think he would like to share this. And he did. And from that started our first phone call and then was a 2-year relationship where I designed close to 90% of the podcast graphics that he helped other podcasters create.
Wow, cool.
So for years, I was the designer for, you know, Podcasters Paradise and a handful of other stuff. And some of it I did personally. Later on down the road, I ended up having to, you know, I had some of my team helping me with that because it the demand was very high. We were doing 3 or 4 graphics a week. So I've designed hundreds of graphics for the iTunes marketplace. And it was a direct result of providing value to somebody who didn't even ask for it, but it was something that they could use. And it just started a conversation.
That key takeaway, I think, right there is, you know, offer value to people and they will definitely take notice of it.
Absolutely. And you can't expect anything in return from it either. I mean, if you do it with the expectation of I'm going to do this to weasel my way in, it doesn't necessarily work. You just have to do it, not expect anything, and hope that you can start a relationship off on a positive note and just have that conversation. And if there's a need for more of what you do, it'll be exposed and then you can take advantage of it.
I think a lot of people can smell out real quick too, whether the value you're giving is authentic or whether you're doing it for, you know, your own ulterior motives.
Yeah. Yeah. And I agree. I mean, that's why, and even when we started this call, something I say a lot is, you know, is there anything I can do to serve and support you? And I don't say that to be manipulative at all. I genuinely do want to serve and support people that are advocates of my show and my content. And I think that's the way that people should look at a lot of these business opportunities is how can I just serve and support other people? It's something that isn't practiced as much as I would like to see online. You know, a lot of people go right for the kill and it's like, no, Gary Vee had it right with the jab, 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 right hook. You know, you've got to do a few jabs before you come in with the right hook. You can't just come in strong.
I mean, the podcast and really your book is what, you know, kind of got me interested in everything that you've been doing in your career. But your book called Brand Dominance, How to Create a Disruptive Social Brand, extremely good book. Anybody that's listening who hasn't read it, I highly recommend you go pick up a copy of it. And I should congratulate you too, by the way. I know it's been a while, but you did such a great job with the book launch that it was actually featured on Inc.com. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, man, it was a trip. I mean, everything about that book was kind of a surprise to me. Like I knew for a long time I wanted to write a book, and it just happened to be that one of my clients knew somebody who helps people get published and leveraged the Amazon distribution channels. Writing the book was kind of difficult. I ended up having to lock myself in a hotel room for 2 days here in Phoenix, where I live, but mind you, right? So I had to get out of my office, get out of my home, and just lock myself in the room and complete this thing. But there were a lot of things I did right, and we can talk about all those if you'd like, but, you know, getting featured was totally just kind of a fluke. One of my listeners in the podcast got the book. They read the book. I mean, the book is honestly, it's fairly poorly written. There's a lot of misspellings and punctuation. It's not the best written book, but, you know, it's a bestseller. So
yeah, if it makes you feel any better, I didn't notice any of those things.
Fantastic. Good, good. Yeah, so it's funny because I get those emails all the time, and this is spelled wrong, and I'm like, you know, I'm not going back and changing it. It's done for me. When I create content, as soon as I hit publish or as soon as it launches, I'm like, what's next? I don't sit and like, I'm just, you know, for me, I create so much content that I'm not going to kind of rest the, you know, sit with the rest of my life on this last piece of content that I created. It's like, what's the next piece?
Yeah, I hear you. I just became an author myself, and I've already gotten two emails that say, hey, on page 56, you misspelled this word and you used this comma incorrectly. I'm like, really? Thanks. Maybe when I update it, I'll fix it. But I'm already thinking about the next book, not necessarily revision to book one.
me too. And I think that's the way people need to think about their content creation in general is, you know, the content you produce doesn't always have to be perfect. You need to produce it, publish it, and then move on to the next thing. And then, you know, this idea of like unicorn content of like, well, what are people really engaging in the most, and doing more of that, is another strategy that I've tried to leverage. And brand dominance itself, I mean, the book was designed for entrepreneurs and wantrepreneurs, and my audience has actually pivoted a lot to where, I don't want to be known as the authority to that type of demographic as much. And it's naturally pivoted. Again, my audience revealed itself to me. I thought I was creating content for a specific audience, but I'm discovering now that my audience is a little different than what I thought.
Interesting. I want to talk a little bit more about that when I get into chapter 3, which actually is called defining your audience. But before we get there, and this is a question I ask a lot of different people and I get different answers. And you're such a knowledgeable person when it comes to marketing and branding. I'm curious, what does branding mean to you?
I talk about this a lot because branding is not a visual aesthetic. You know, it's not the logo. I mean, those are components to it. I think ultimately branding is a connection in between the audience and the company itself, or the customer and the business. The relationship between those two is brand. Now, brands can be good, brands can be bad. So brand is the emotional connection that's created. Companies have zero control over their brand. The entrepreneur, the business owner, no control. They only influence the brand. They only influence the way in which the consumer perceives them. So brands can be loved, brands can be hated. Brands can fall in between the space, which we like to call noise, where they're not loved or hated. They're just kind of out there regurgitating BS onto the internet. So I think, I mean, branding doesn't necessarily mean good or bad. It's just the relationship between the customer and the company. And sometimes that can be defined easily, and sometimes it's very complex. Part of what we do these days in our agency is we help bridge the gap between the customer and the company to create more meaningful experiences within their brand. So the brand itself is not just any one singular thing. You know, there's people that say I do brand development and then I go to their website and they just do graphic design. And that's just so off point, you know. But to me, branding is really a collection of experiences that happen over time that either reinforce a positive or negative emotional connection between the customer and the company.
Okay. And so what does brand dominance mean? When you say that to people, what does brand dominance mean?
So brand dominance is when such a strong emotional connection is created between the customer and the company that the customer not only buys their products, but also becomes an ambassador for the growth of that company. So the customer, that person isn't just buying their product. They're also an evangelist. They're out there being an ambassador and representing and telling other people, you need to buy this product. You need to, if you have a similar experience that I have, you're going to love this, you know, this brand is going to be, they're just connected. There's an affinity. There's a shared value. So that's how we define brand dominance, is when there's such a strong emotional connection is created, the customer not only purchases from them, but also is an ambassador for that company.
One of the things you talk about when you're starting to build your brand is vision. So how important is having a vision for your business as you begin that building process?
100% a must have, critical, vital, okay? It's probably the one thing that most people spend the least amount of time in, and from it stems either massive failure, burnout, or just a lack of desire to continue on with the business. So if I can give you an example, the first agency that I built, this was after I graduated, and we talked about it earlier. It was an ad agency, a local business. We had a 10,000 square foot facility, 30 employees, tons of creatives, and all sorts of people. Massive overhead, right? So we had this big space, massive overhead, tons of employees, and to meet our financial goals, we had to onboard hundreds of clients, and we had over 450 clients when I sold my stake in that. And the thing was, is because we were serving clients on a local level, we kind of had a ceiling. You know, our average ticket size was maybe $2,500 to $5,000. Well, it's very difficult to support a 10,000 square foot facility and 30 employees with accounts that come in at $2,500 a piece. Okay. So we would onboard tons of people, tons of clients doing small projects from business card designs to websites. And I'm talking about, now, you know, like the agency that we're at, it's just so vastly different. But here's what I created, because I didn't have a clear vision of what I wanted. I created a business that literally took over my life. I was a slave to my computer, you know, 60, 70, 80 hours a week sometimes. I'd come in every morning and there would be 100 emails in my inbox. And I honestly just wanted to end it, right? I'm like, this is not what I was trying to create at all, okay? So there is definitely a difference between, having this vision of, you know, being very crystal clear on what I'm trying to create and where the business actually ends up. So I created something that it just wasn't very fulfilling for me. Now, we have in our new agency, just to give you another perspective, we have like 4 clients in total. These are massive clients, okay, that are on monthly retainers. So here's the thing. My inbox today is not blasted with emails of push this pixel over here, change this image over here. The emails that come in today are really focused on some of our higher goals and not just order taking. And it came through vision, right? It came through having a good understanding of what is it that I'm actually trying to build, number one. Number two, what are my kind of financial goals? And number three is like, what type of lifestyle do I want to live? Am I trying to create a business that I have a ton of employees that I have to manage and train, oversee, a massive overhead? Or do I want the freedom to go and work anywhere in the world, which I do currently, and it doesn't affect our income? You know, there's a criteria that we look for right now, my partners and I in our business. And it's a very simple, I don't know what you would call it, an analogy or anagram, but it's ELF. Which stands for easy, lucrative, and fun. So we ask ourselves, is this thing that we're about to do easy, lucrative, and fun? And today what I have is a very elfy business. It's very easy, it's very lucrative and fun. We get paid a lot of money to do a lot less, but we solve bigger problems, and it's with less amount of clients. The last business was the opposite of elf. I don't even have an example for what we would call that, but it was a bad business model. And it's because I didn't have a clear vision. It's funny because most people will spend more time designing a grocery list than they do their life. And if you're trying to start a business, you need to start something that also kind of fits in with your core values as a human being on this planet and your lifestyle of what are you trying to live like, because making money is not everything. It's part of it. And I think being happy and being fulfilled and satisfied internally, to me, it's a lot more rewarding than making the money. So having a vision of what you want, and I don't even mean from a business perspective, I mean from a life perspective, will help make sure that you are creating a business that fits in alignment with that.
sounds like it, values are very intertwined with your vision as well. How important are values for you as you build this brand?
Well, I mean, I think the values are critical because, I mean, you don't want to get stuck with burnout, right? You don't want to be doing stuff that's really not fulfilling for you. I think that identifying those things as early on as you can is really important. And let's just look at the flip side. Let's pretend like you don't identify those things and you just start building and creating and you make this business and you're running. At some point, you're going to hit a wall because it doesn't align with the values naturally inherent with the person that you are. Okay. So at some point you're going to hit a roadblock and either you're going to get burnt out and have zero passion for continuing on the business, or the business won't succeed in general because there's just really no drive or passion to pursue that anymore. So I think that one way or another, you're going to have to be faced with your values, whether it's indirectly through unintentional, you know, discovery, or through intentional discovery where you set the time aside to try to really pinpoint those values out and create a business around those core values.
So let's talk about intentional discovery for your values. Is it possible to use Legos to do that for your business brand?
Yeah, so I'm so happy you brought that up, man. So there's a methodology out there for facilitation called Lego Serious Play. And to give you a little bit of context, what we do these days is we do what I call facilitation. We help people solve very high-level problems. But to facilitate and to help people solve problems, you don't give them a prescription without diagnosis. So you're diagnosing problems. You're not providing solutions. And that's what we do a lot of right now is we try to diagnose the problems because a lot of times the people and the companies and the entrepreneurs themselves, they have the answer. They just need help deducing what the right answer is. Lego is and Lego Serious Play is a very interesting form of facilitation. So most strategy sessions are based on two forms of communication, which is auditory and visual. So if you're in a really cool strategy session, they're probably using sticky notes, they're whiteboarding, everybody's kind of contributing. It's a very visual exercise and strategy session, and it's very auditorial. Everyone's talking. But when you add Lego into the mix, you now add a third form of communication, which is kinesthetic. So when you are communicating and trying to solve problems with these three modes of communication rather than two, a lot of really interesting things happen. Number one, you have 100% participation with every single person that's within the session, the strategy session. So when it comes to coming up with, you know, identifying your core values, I can't take you through the whole process because that's a 2-hour episode in and out of itself. But I will tell you that when you look at things, when you're actually looking and touching things while you're describing them, you're able to ask some really interesting questions like, well, is there a reason why that brick is see-through? Is there a reason why your minifigure doesn't have any hands? I see you've added lots of heads on top of this one. Does he wear many hats? Like, you can deduce a lot deeper and actually drive the conversation deeper because there's this new mode of communication that people are able to leverage in their sessions. So we have an exercise that we use called a shared visioning and core values. So with shared visioning, one of the big issues that we've found when working with our clients is a lack of alignment between the leadership. Everyone kind of has their own ideas and nobody is all congruent on what to do next, right? So we come in almost like an intervention and we bring these people together, and our number one focus is to not leave the room until everyone is in agreement of the new trajectory that our vision has outlined. And we've just found that using this form of facilitation is just extremely powerful. So if any of your listeners are interested in this, it's not a joke. Okay, they call it serious play because it's very serious work, but you're using play to communicate. Just Google Lego Serious Play. There's actually a book by a gentleman named Sean Blair called Serious Work, and I just interviewed him on my podcast. He's a London-based facilitator. And I mean, he's using Legos to solve very complex energy issues in the UK. He's working with government entities using Lego facilitation to help them solve energy problems that they're having. And it's incredible how it's being used. So there's a lot of ways you can do it. There's a lot of ways to facilitate. And we love this new kinesthetic approach.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, and I do recommend anybody who wants to know more, check out your podcast called How to Use Legos to Facilitate Meetings and Workshops. Really, really good. Definitely perked my curiosity. I think one of the things that it does is it, especially when you get a group of people together from that have a certain culture within an organization, it kind of disarms everybody because you're quote unquote playing, right? So you're not doing business stuff. And so I think it has a way, just like when you're a kid, to make, to make everybody feel comfortable and kind of on the same level, as opposed to, when you're in a meeting, you clearly know who's in charge.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You're absolutely right. And it, one of the first exercises we actually do with Lego Serious Play, because a lot of people and C-suite specifically, is they're like, this is a waste of time. This is a kid's toy. So we actually have to dispel that really early on. And there's a few ways that we do that, just through very simple challenges that we say, well, build your role in the organization. And you have, we'll maybe give them 20 pieces to do that in 3 minutes. So they're forced to, on a time sensitive nature, use their creativity, use their thinking, right? And then we would even ask them to, okay, now take what your build and share it with the person next to you. And now you explain the person next to you's role by looking at their figure, right? And they go deeper into it. So it's showing this creative process of thinking by using these builds. It's very interesting. It's probably, I've just found it to be one of the most effective ways to facilitate and dive deeper into conversation on these specific areas, whether it be visioning or, you can do strategy builds, you can do scenarios. There's a lot of different types of facilitation you can do with Lego, but it's really, really awesome. And for me, from a strategic standpoint, I'm a strategic consultant and a branding consultant. I just was immediately just gravitated right to it.
I go back to something that you mentioned earlier, which is you've discovered now that your audience is starting to shift or change. And I think a lot of times when people get started building their brand, that maybe their audience isn't really even the first thing that they think about. So what does it mean when you go into good detail in the book on how to do this, but how do you define an audience? How do you figure out who you're talking to?
Yeah. So, there's two things I want to mention. One is that you can try to identify your audience before you have it, and that's okay. You can try to tailor content to a specific audience. What I found works best is if you're creating content and doing influencer type marketing, podcasting, authoring, things like that, you just create the content and the audience will be revealed to you. And from that, when the audience is revealed to you, then I would go into a profiling exercise where, okay, so now that I know that these types of people are my tribe, how can I create more meaningful content and go even deeper? Instead of going wider, I want to go deeper, right? So I think John says this is an inch wide and a mile deep type of approach. And that's just what I believe, because I initially created my podcast for entrepreneurs and solopreneurs. And I think that I did attract a lot of those. But what I ended up attracting was a lot of designers and creatives. Some of them are students in design school. Some of them are freelancers. Some of them are even agency owners. And now, even more than ever, we have agency owners that are reaching out to us, because we, as an agency, now get paid to think and not to do. We do very little. We think a lot. Okay, we solve complex problems and we facilitate. We're not doing as many logo designs and graphic design and all that stuff. It's just not our model. Our model is to solve complex problems through facilitation. And most of our clients have their own creative department. So what we're having now is we have all these creatives that are like, how do I shift from being a designer and an order taker to a problem solver? And we've really embraced that change. And we've now started to create more content tailored towards the audience that we're finding are really raving and craving for more of this information.
That's cool. I'm glad you've been able to, you've seen that shift and you recognize it, because some people, there's a shift and they don't even recognize when it happens. And they just continue down the same path that they were going, and they see no success from it.
So on our agency website, which is just vitals.agency, There's a couple things that you can download, a few decks. Some of them are geared towards CEOs and CMOs, and then another one's just a general information deck of what we provide and what our company is all about. That deck is downloaded more than anything else on our website, and it's downloaded by other agency owners who want to know how we are doing what we're doing. And in fact, I love the culture of the design community. I'm a part of that culture. And to me, I'm like, wow, this is even easier because I identify more with them than I do some of the solopreneurs and entrepreneurs just because of my education and all the time that I've spent working in this field, right? So, yeah, but I do want to kind of answer your question. How do you profile somebody? And because I do talk about it in the book, and I don't mind if we go a few minutes over. We talked about cold data, warm data. The warmer information that you want to look for when profiling your people are psychographs. Are they introverted? Are they extroverted? What are their risk levels? What are their risk tolerances? There's some stuff here that I didn't go over in the book, which is what influencers do they follow? You know, my favorite way of profiling somebody is very sneaky and very easy. Just go to Facebook, find somebody who's downloaded your content or somebody who you know is a fan. When you go to their actual profile, there's a little more tab. And if you click more, you can go to likes and you can see all the pages that they like. You can see all the influencers that they follow. You can see enough information about them to make more tactical and educated decisions on the type of content that you want to create. So what we're really trying to do is create an alignment between the brand or between the company and the customer. So how do we do that? Well, this type of information that I'm stealing and pulling from other people's profiles has the answers inside of it. I don't have the answers. We look and we discover those answers together, right? So if you're not sure, I mean, look at your customers. Who's forfeiting their money to buy your product and service? Go to their Facebook page and create a profile, create a persona, use their name, use their picture, like put it together in a Word document and say, okay, Colby Callahan is, you know, she's blah, 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 blah. And just fill it all out and look at that and look at the big picture and say, well, what would Colby click on? You know, what would really engage her? What would she really want? And you can't do it just by knowing her age and her education and where she lives. That's cold information. I want to know where does she shop? Who does she follow? What type of content does she share? You know, look at her actual timeline and her feed itself. What has she shared in the last week? The more information you have on these people and these profiles, the better you're armed to create more meaningful experiences with them and ultimately create a positive emotional connection between them and the brand, right? That's what we're trying to do because the brand is not good or bad. It just is. So we can only influence it. We can't control it. So can I influence a better experience for this user? Yeah, you can, but you really need to understand who they are. And one of my favorite quotes is Lee Clow. He says, you know, you're the judge of your business, but the consumer is the jury and the executioner. If they're not buying it, then you failed. So they are the customer is the number one most important person, and they're not even on your payroll. You know, so how do we get information from them, you know, without actually pulling them aside on the street? Those are some hacks and strategies for your audience. I mean, I think that if you're struggling to get more business and you're wanting to create, you know, more engagement, especially on social, you need to really have a clear understanding of who your customers are, what they want, what they share, what they don't like, right? And all that information is free on Facebook.
One of the things you said that caught my attention was you talked about it, you know, making that connection to the brand. And as a small business owner, you as a person might be the brand, right? So what role does the small business owner's personality play in the overall brand of the company or business that they're trying to build?
Yeah, it's another great question, man. It really depends on the business model. So there's a couple types of businesses. I mean, there's a business that that I would call more of a practice, where in a practice situation, there's a practitioner that you cannot operate your business without the practitioner. I'll give you an example, a dentist. Now, they do own a business. Don't get me wrong. It's a business. But if they break their back, okay, they're out for however long, right? They're a practitioner. So And then there's other businesses where you're putting pretty much all the social equity and brand equity into an identity, and not into, or into the identity of the business, not into the identity of the individual. And then there's some businesses, for example, like Apple, who kind of did a mixture of both, where they were building this affinity around the brand and the company, but Steve Jobs was the person driving that. So it depends on your strategy of what you're trying to do. I think that if you have any intention of being an influencer or an authority in your space, then you should do things like what you're doing. Author a book, start a podcast, create a platform, right? Absolutely critical. It's helped me with my consulting business. You know, all these things that I just mentioned about you, I've done as well. That's helped me in my consulting business. It's helped me in our agency. And ultimately, nobody cares what my agency's name is because they just want to work with me. They want Aaron Pearson. What is it going to take to get Aaron Pearson over here? Well, okay, his agency now is called Vitals Agency. I guess we're going to have to, you know, hire them. So it really just depends on what your goal is ultimately. Here's the thing I'll tell you, Ryan, that I kind of came to the conclusion with a few years ago, and that is I have specific goals in my life. I have children. My number one goals are to provide opportunities for my family that otherwise they won't have. And I don't care if I'm famous or behind the scenes, as long as I'm getting closer to my goals, right? Some people want to achieve their goals by being famous, and other people just, they'll be behind the desk, behind their computer, putting all their energy and effort into building equity into a business identity and not a personal one. For me, I found that in my line of work, I need to have a personal brand. Because no matter what business I'm in or what name I'm or alias I'm going under at that time, that may succeed, it may fail, but me on a personal branding level, like that's something no one can ever take away from me. That's something that I'll always have until the day I die, right? So that's something that I'm putting, I call it equity, you know, but like digital equity and sweat equity into consistently is building my personal brand. But alongside that, I also have a company that now we're spending a lot of time building equity in that. My podcast, for example, I don't want to go too far off on a tangent, but you know, I'm stopping the Branding Like a Boss podcast. That's under the AaronPearson.com, you know, website and brand. And I'm focusing all of my energy and efforts on our new agency and my partners, because we have a lot more collectively to give to the community than I can do individually. So it's a decision that I'm making where I am stepping back. I've already kind of built myself up as authority of best-selling author. I've got all these other designations, but at the same time, I really want to focus on the growth of our business overall, because, well, we're doing some really awesome stuff and I want to continue doing that.
One of the things that I always hear mentioned almost within the same sentence when you hear somebody talk about a personal brand is the word authenticity. And you talk about it in your book, but I was listening to your podcast. I think it's one of your very first podcasts. And you said something that like literally stopped me in my tracks during my walk. And you said, authenticity is actually a sacrifice. What did you mean by that?
Wow, I don't remember saying that, but I will say authenticity is a sacrifice. The easy thing to do is to not be authentic, is to try to please everybody and try to just go with the flow of the status quo. You know, I think that the ultimate sacrifice is exposing yourself and showing people that you're not perfect. To some people, that's really scary. And I think that the idea of being really, truly authentic, you're sacrificing a part of yourself that's telling you, should I really do that? What are people going to think of me if I say this, right? Every single episode I have, I just put explicit just in case I dropped an F-bomb or, you know, whatever, because I don't know. I'm just in the moment and I go. And so sometimes I'm sure they're not all explicit. I just rather be safe than sorry. But you know, people tell me, and especially family members, like, how does that help your business? Doesn't this hurt your business? Like, oh, I hate seeing you, you know, be out there like this as this guy who just is like FTW. And I'm not an FTW type of guy. Okay. which stands for F the world, right? That's not my personality. I'm just very blunt and I say things as I see them. So I think that the sacrifice truly, and I'll just kind of feel like I'm repeating myself or saying it again, but is really in this idea of like being okay not pleasing other people, and we are always wired from childhood to be sensitive to other people's feelings and emotions, and I understand that, but this is my show, this is my platform, this is my business, this is my personal brand. It's not yours. So if you don't like it, go on, find somebody else that, you know, you can identify with. That's okay. It's not going to hurt or help me. When you do that, what happens is that the tribe and the audience and the customers that you create are really close to you. There is a shared affinity. So you know that, you know, I can say what I want on the podcast, and my audience, it's going to resonate with them. So instead of trying to, you know, please everybody, you please a few, but those few people help carry you much further than everybody else can. Plus, you know, who wants to keep up with an act of pretending to be somebody that they're not? You know, that's not sustainable either. That goes back to your values and your vision. You know, do you want to be a company that just pleases everybody, or do you want to be a company that has some real raving fans? And that also goes to the point of earlier when we were talking about branding isn't good or bad. It just is what it is. And the good brands people love, the bad brands people hate, and the brands that nobody cares about are right in the middle because they don't stand in a strong enough position for anything.
I want to wrap this up here. Just a couple more questions for you. I want to take just a couple minutes and talk about your course, your online course called Activator. I've purchased it. I've gone through all the exercises. It's very, very well done, by the way. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah. So the Activator was designed for digital entrepreneurs that are looking to create, grow, and essentially monetize their digital brand. And this was really the first iteration of what we do now from a strategy perspective. And I used to take companies through the same process that I have now packaged up in a digital format for tens of thousands of dollars. Okay. And I wanted to create a product that would help people, you know, define their brand, identify what needs to be created. So from all the digital assets, what needs to be created to really execute on the definition and on the vision. And then how do we impact our audience, right? So how do we now turn our audience into what I mentioned earlier, these brand ambassadors? How do we create content that people actually want to share and engage in? And I wanted to create a digital product because there's only one of me. I can't do this, you know, I can't share this information every single day with one individual. It's the same motivation for writing the book, because I wanted to create something that would help the masses. So, you know, we've had over 400 people purchase this product. I really wanted to shed some light on creating a vision, like we talked about earlier, defining your brand, what you absolutely need to execute on that, and then how do we impact the audience?
And if people wanted to pick up or take a look at the course, where would we send them?
So you would want to go to aaronpearson.com. I'm pretty sure at the bottom, even on the navigation on the site nav, there's a tab for products. I have a podcasting guide. We've got the brand dominance there, and then we have the Activator there. There are a few, different CTAs across the site for that. And it is a digital course. It's packed with a handful of workbooks. I have audio files that coincide that kind of walk people through the workbooks and the exercises. And then we also have a series of videos. Again, that's in relationship to the work that you're doing there. So I want to say it's about 20 hours worth of work. You could probably condense it down and do it much faster. But here's the thing about this course is that I don't want to see entrepreneurs with good ideas fail because they didn't spend enough time in this ideation and intention phase. So I really created this product in hopes to save entrepreneurs a great deal of time and money, and more important than the money, because I think the course is about $200. Yeah, it's listed right now at $197. It's time. Most people don't have enough time. they don't have the time needed to, or the funding needed in relativity to that, to create something. They kind of have like this one shot and they want to get things created. So my thing is invest the time early on to save the hundreds of hours later on. And that's why this product was created, because again, this comes back to solving problems. We want to help solve problems and really provide clarity for the entrepreneur. To me, clarity is so valuable, and it's so hard from a brand strategist standpoint. What I ultimately do is I help people gain clarity. And some people don't value that. Some people don't understand the value in that. But I can tell you, not having clarity, not having a vision, costs you a lot of money and can create a lot of heartache. So that's what I'm hoping to bridge the gap with this product. The other two products, just to give them a quick plug, one of them is a content strategy guide. And that goes through the process of how do you create a content strategy. We go into user profiling. We go into goals and priorities. What distribution channels do you need to leverage based on the audience personas that we identify in the course? So it's very deep in user profiling. And then how to create a content strategy and micro content with that. And then the other product that we're coming out with, which is going to probably be the cheapest of all of my products or the least expensive, is a naming product. How do you come up with a name for a company? It's very difficult. So many people just sit on GoDaddy and, you know, they try to come up with a name and you'll spend hours and hours doing it. Well, this is a 2-hour exercise that I've created and a worksheet. And I think we're listing that at about $50. And all my new products actually, don't want to plug too much, but all my new products are going to be featured on another website called The Future. It's FUTUR, and I'll send you the links for that. So that's the marketplace where we're going to be featuring those new products as well.
Awesome. I can tell you, having purchased the course, it's well worth $197. And one of my favorite quotes is from Abraham Lincoln when he said, "If you give me 6 hours to cut down a tree, I'll spend the first 4 sharpening my axe." To me, building your brand, doing the ideation and, you know, with intention and defining your values and your vision, that is all sharpening the axe. Because without that, you're just going to have an axe. You're going to go hit a bunch of trees and eventually you're going to achieve nothing.
Right. Yep. Well, I appreciate you saying that, because that is one of the things in my videos. And here's what I'll do for you, man. I'll put together a promo code you can put in the link in the description, and I'll give you and your listeners 20% off on this if they're really interested in pursuing it.
No, awesome. I appreciate that. And speaking of that, what are the best ways for the listeners to get in touch with you?
Yeah. So I mean, AaronPearson.com, on there are all my social links. One of my favorite platforms, probably at least my two top favorites, are going to be Instagram and Twitter. I'm definitely highly engaged in Twitter and in Instagram. Facebook, obviously, I'm there all the time out of necessity. But my Twitter handle is AP_creative. And my Instagram is AaronPearson333. So you can check those out. Also, if you want to keep up on some of the new stuff that we're doing, I would go to our agency site, thevitals.agency, sign up for our newsletter there, and you'll be up to speed on all the stuff we do, because we do digital summits, we have live workshops, we have courses and a handful of other things. And it's not just for creatives. It's all about strategy and solving problems through different frameworks.
Awesome. Fantastic. Aaron, any final thoughts, words of wisdom, tips, anything you'd like to pass on to anybody that's listening today?
Yeah, I just, you know, for anyone who's listening, and I don't know where you're currently at in your business, and Gary Vee actually talks about this a little bit. It's like self-awareness. And I think that this idea of having a clear vision, to me, I call it, you know, having a vision and having clarity on what it is you want, is probably the first thing that you need to step back and do. I don't care if you're 10 years into your business or it's a new startup. I think you should get really crystal clear on, you know, play the tape through. Close your eyes. Just think about, you know, 3 years from now, let's say everything goes as planned. What does my life actually look like? Am I more fulfilled as a human being? Am I fulfilling the values that I have as a person on this planet? Or is it very self-serving, and does it look like me being a slave, you know, to this thing that I've created? Spend time really identifying what it is you want, out of this life and create a business that's in alignment with it.
Aaron, awesome. It's been fantastic talking to you. I wish you the best with the agency and safe travels with all your upcoming trips. And just thank you for being on the show today.
Ryan, thank you for having me. Again, I really appreciate it, bro.
Vision, values, and goals. I have to admit, this conversation with Aaron hit me pretty hard. In a good and healthy way, of course. You see, I've been one of those people who started out by simply creating content. I had a message to share, and I shared it. I didn't think much, if at all, about a vision or my long-term goals. As I look back on this show, it's kind of funny. My very first guest, Tim Salmier, asked me right before I hit the record button, where did I see all of this going? And the funny thing is that I really couldn't answer him then. And it wasn't until a few months ago when I sent out a survey to all of you listeners that I actually began to start to think about it. And for those of you who took the survey, thank you. The survey did reveal that nearly 2/3 of you who listen in each week are either building a business on the side or you have a business already. Many of you are coaches of some kind, and there are several of you who are college students. You see, the survey helped to reveal the audience of this show to me, just as Aaron said it would. And that's why I think this discussion with Aaron today is so important. You need to get started, but at some point, you have to step back and define your vision, your values, and your goals. Listening to Aaron today, I can now clearly see how a lack of defined vision and goals at this stage of my progression has most likely impeded my progress. Now, the good thing is that I've been working on building a platform for a few years, and so now I think it's really probably my time to step back and define my vision and goals. Why haven't I done this prior to now? Well, that's a really good question, and I think a part of it is because defining those things are hard and a little scary because what they represent is way more than just words on paper. If you really stop and think about it, defining your vision, your values, and your goals are actually commitments to yourself, to your business, and to your audience. And while they may seem daunting at first, in the long run, they're totally worth it. So if you're just getting started, or you've been at it for a period of time, do yourself a favor and take some time to step back and define where you're headed. Think about where you see yourself in 3 to 5 years from now. Once you understand your future vision, you can use it to guide your decisions and start moving your brand and your business forward so that you can forge those strong relationships with your audience. And as Aaron says on his podcast, you can start doing branding like a boss. Aaron, thank you for your time today and for sharing your branding wisdom with us. I know you've inspired me, and I hope many of the listeners to challenge ourselves, our visions, and our paths. And I wish you the best of luck with the Vitals Agency. For those of you listening in today, as always, thank you. I appreciate you tuning in and sharing some of your time to me. And I do want to call out before we close out the show today, the elephant in the room, which of course is the poor audio quality on my end of today's conversation. You see, I was in the process of packing yet again, and I had disconnected a piece of equipment that I thought I could do without. Clearly, it turns out that I was wrong. But at least Aaron's side of the conversation was perfect, and really, that's all that matters. These things happen in podcasting and in life, so rather than dwell on how bad I personally sounded, I'm moving on. Speaking of moving on, don't forget to pick up a copy of Aaron's book, Brand Dominance, and if you're interested in his online course, Activator, which I do highly recommend, head on over to aaronpearson.com, follow the link to the course, and enter the code BNY, that's BNY like brand new you, at the checkout for a very, very generous 20% discount. Also, remember, my book, Career Cred, The 4 Simple Steps to Build Your Digital Brand and Boost Credibility in Your Career, is available on Amazon and your favorite virtual bookshelf. If you've already purchased a copy of the book, thank you, thank you, thank you. And if you could please, don't forget to go back and leave a rating and review. You can find the show notes and links to everything that Aaron and I talked about today over on the blog at ryanroten.com/Aaron Pearson. One final thing to note before we part ways today, the month of May is going to be a crazy one for me personally. From unpacking to client meetings to my oldest son graduating from high school, my time is going to become very limited very quickly. Because of this, I've decided to release only 2 shows in May, this one today and the next one, which will drop on May 18th. In that show, we'll be walking through a brand mapping strategy, and trust me, you won't want to miss it. I'll be back to weekly shows in June, which Now that I say that out loud, I cannot believe that I'm talking June already. But anyway, that'll wrap us up for today. So until the next show drops on May 18th, I've been Ryan, and I'm out. Today's show was edited and produced by Ryan Roten. The transition music is Hawaii Aloha Baby by Heaven, and the intro and outro music, as always, is Pulse by Sound Road.